I'd like for us to think about something that happened in 2 Chronicles, the 18th chapter. You've just been reading that this week, and while it's fresh on our minds, I'd like for us to explore a few things about this. We are familiar with the story of Ahab and how wicked and horrible he was, and this particular alliance that is made with Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah. Well, Ahab was wicked to the core, and his marriage with Jezebel by itself could have destroyed Israel. Baalism was essentially the official religion at this point. And Ahab showed himself to be unreliable, untrustworthy, covetous, and in no way concerned about the things of God. 1 Kings chapter 16 reminds us that he did evil more than any king who was before him. And Elijah the prophet was sent, as well as Elisha, later to warn and try to provide some kind of corrective to the wickedness of this time. Now, on the other hand, Jehoshaphat was a good king. Consider this great tribute in 1 Chronicles 17 and verse 3. The Lord was with Jehoshaphat because he followed the example of his father David's earlier days and did not seek the Baals, but sought the God of his father, followed his commandments, and did not act as Israel did. So the Lord established the kingdom in his control, and all Judah brought tribute to Jehoshaphat. He had great riches and honor. He took great pride in the ways of the Lord, and again removed the high places and the Asherim from Judah. So the contrast between Ahab and Jehoshaphat, both reigning at this particular time, is great. They're not really alike at all. And so you might think, well, that could have resulted in problems between them, maybe wars or something along those lines. But sadly, herein lies one of the most terrible, the root of one of the most terrible episodes of Judah. Jehoshaphat had one terrible vice, and that is that he made alliances with wicked kings. He made alliances with Ahab, then Ahaziah, then Joram, and Judah had to pay a horrific price because of this particular problem that he had. And I'd like for us to consider the story in 2 Chronicles 18. We won't read that through right now, but I want to kind of recap what's going on right here. Aram, or Syria, had taken control of Ramoth-Gilead, the city on the eastern side of the Jordan. And Ahab considered that that was his city, and he wanted to go back and take control of that. So in this alliance with Jehoshaphat, he decided that he would ask Jehoshaphat to come and help him fight against Ramoth-Gilead. And Jehoshaphat said, well, I want to hear a word from the Lord first before I do this. And so, you know, Ahab was a little reluctant, but he called in his prophets. And of course, you know, 400 prophets of Baal, they come in and they start saying, go up and prosper. In other words, you're going to win, you're going to fight, go on up. We're behind you all the way. And Jehoshaphat says, now wait a minute. I want to hear a word from the Lord. I know these guys aren't prophets of Yahweh. I want to hear what Yahweh has to say. And Ahab wasn't happy about that. He said, well, there's really only one guy available right now. His name is Micaiah, and I don't like him because he always says bad things about me. And Jehoshaphat said, well, don't talk like that. And so let's bring him in. And as Micaiah was coming in, you might recall that he was told by Ahab's servants, now you know that all these other prophets have been telling the king to go up and prosper, so you need to talk like them. And Micaiah says, I'm only going to speak what the Lord says to speak. He goes in before Ahab and Jehoshaphat, and he says, go up and prosper. He talked just like the other prophets before him. Now, I don't know whether he was mocking or whether he was just, you know, kind of mimicking the way those prophets were. But Ahab knew that wasn't really the message. And he says, how many times do I have to tell you to tell me the truth? And Micaiah says, all right, you're not going to prosper. And in so many words, he basically says, you're going to fail. And you're basically, Ahab is going to die in this. And Ahab turns to Jehoshaphat and says, see, I told you, he only says bad things about me. And he has Micaiah put into jail. And so you get this sense that Ahab has no real concern about anything truthful there. Now, if we kind of back up for just a moment and recognize that the way alliances were often made is that they were done through marriage.
And so in this particular case, Jehoshaphat's son, Jehoram, not to be confused with Ahab's son, Jehoram, two different men, but Jehoshaphat's son, Jehoram, married Ahab and Jezebel's daughter. Her name was Athaliah. And she was perhaps even worse than Jezebel in terms of her character, her wickedness. And, we'll reference that in just a moment. But just kind of bear that in mind as we recognize that the events that are about to unfold here really have some devastating consequences for Judah. And so really the first point I want to make about this morning is the fact that alliances matter. That who we align ourselves with matters. And we don't like when we're charged with being guilty of something by association. And certainly that's not always the case. Just because you were with somebody or associated with somebody in some way doesn't make you guilty of everything. And even with Jehoshaphat, he personally was not guilty of everything that Ahab was doing. Yet it stands to reason that who we choose to align ourselves with, especially under circumstances like this with a marriage, can have an impact far beyond what we are able to predict. And you see this in the situation with Judah. Choosing those with whom we make alliances in this world can lead us to do things we may never have thought of prior. It can have a devastating effect both in our own thinking and the decisions that we make. Now, you know that Jehoshaphat had to be uncomfortable with what was going on here. To have these prophets of Baal come in and do all of that, and Ahab is trying to get him to do, you know it had to be uncomfortable for him. And so he calls for this prophet of the Lord, yet even after hearing from Micaiah, and this is baffling to me, even after hearing from Micaiah, he goes up with Ahab anyway, and still does what Ahab asks him to do. Even though he wanted to inquire of the Lord, the one with whom he was allied didn't care one bit about what the Lord really thought. And think about how that can affect our own thinking. Remember the warning that Paul gives in 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 33. Do not be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals. Now, he was likely quoting a well-known proverb, but one that was certainly true. And in this case, the concern was over Christians who were thinking about the resurrection, thinking even that the resurrection wasn't a reality. He had just quoted another well-known statement. If the dead are not raised, let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die. In other words, the thinking was making its rounds. If there's no resurrection, then we could just go have some fun and forget about it. People were being influenced, corrupting good morals for the sake of an error, in this case, about the resurrection. When we align ourselves with people who will take us down a path of corrupted thinking, we are setting ourselves up for egregious error and failure. And in our day and age, this doesn't have to just be about friendships, but even what we spend the majority of our time with, the books and the shows and so forth, what we allow ourselves to have come into our minds and influence the way that we think. And the consequences can be terrible. Again, even worse than what we might have imagined otherwise. Now, some object, didn't Jesus make himself a friend of sinners? He did eat and drink with them, didn't he? Well, indeed, we do find Jesus eating with those described as sinners in passages like Matthew 9, 10, and 11, Mark 2, 15, and 16, Luke 5 and verse 30, as well as 15 and verse 2. But the question is, for what purpose did Jesus do this? What's interesting is that these were people who were actually following Jesus and being taught by him. The context indicates that they knew that they were sick and they knew they were in need of the great physician, which was contrasted with the Pharisees who didn't think they needed the Savior because they were already righteous in themselves. Jesus was seeking the lost and teaching them, not simply hanging out and allying himself with them in their sins. We certainly need to have an influence of the world, and this requires being among people of the world, but we also need to be doing this with great caution and understand that there can be great temptations that we might even be unaware of. We're not to love
this world. And as 2 Corinthians 6 reminds us, we are not to be unequally yoked with the world. And so the point remains, with whom we align ourselves matters. Be careful, especially about agreements made that could involve us in something far more nefarious than we first imagined. Secondly, is that actions do have consequence. And, you know, often we call this, you know, maybe unintended consequences. From Jehoshaphat's perspective, if you were to talk with Jehoshaphat when all of this was going on, do you think that Jehoshaphat would have said, yes, I intend for my son to be taken down this road of wickedness and for him to kill his own brothers and for Athaliah to usurp the throne? Yes, I intend for all of that to happen. You think Jehoshaphat would have thought that? Well, certainly not. But these are unintended consequences that he did not foresee. What would have happened from his perspective was not something that he or anyone really could have predicted aside from God. And given his otherwise fine character, he wouldn't have planned for it to happen that way. But again, now think about these devastating effects, because they didn't stop at the death of Ahab. Jehoram marries Athaliah. Jehoram was so wicked that he was said to walk in the ways of Ahab. You know how a lot of the kings would walk in the ways, some of them at least, the righteous ones would walk in the ways of David, or some are said not to walk in the ways of David. But what's said about Jehoram is he walks in the ways of Ahab. He slaughtered his own brothers to secure his throne. But he did have a son named Ahaziah. Again, not to be confused with the other Ahaziah. That would be Uncle Ahaziah. He should not be confused with the sons of Ahab, also by those names. And yes, it does get pretty tricky there. But just keep in mind, often names are used many times. Even in our culture, if I ask you how many Davids and Jameses and Johns you know, you would know quite a few. But when Ahaziah of Israel died, that's Ahab's son, when he died, his brother Joram became king. And when Jehoram of Judah died, his son Ahaziah became king. Now, Joram of Israel and Ahaziah of Judah, they made an alliance. Jehu was commissioned to kill off all of Ahab's family. And then the fallout from all of this, Jehu killed Joram of Israel, Ahaziah of Judah, and that also included the death of Jezebel. The one person he did not kill was Athaliah. Because when Ahaziah died, Athaliah, the mother, the queen, started killing off her own grandchildren so that she could usurp the throne. She missed one child by the name of Joash, and we'll come back to him in a little bit. But the point is that Athaliah then began reigning over Judah for some 6 years, and this was a reign of terror. Idolatry coming in and all the evil that was being practiced. And I want you to understand is that the point is that evil that overtook Judah was initially made possible by Jehoshaphat's alliance with Ahab. Unintended consequences, perhaps, but terrible consequences regardless of the intent. We need to try to look ahead a little bit and use wisdom. What consequences will our own actions have down the road? Could David have anticipated the consequences from his sin? Could Adam have anticipated the consequences of what even happened to the world based on his and Eve's sin? There is a kind of what we call a butterfly effect. What seems to be a small flutter initially becomes a huge storm down the road. And we need to be aware of that and be careful about it. The third thing I want to say to you this morning is that truth matters.
I want you to look at Ahab's, I would just call it a ludicrous attempt at sounding honest. Ahab was used to listening to his own prophets of Baal. These were deceiving prophets. As Micaiah makes it well known right here, again, consider now 2 Chronicles 18 and verse 12. The messenger who went to summon Micaiah spoke to him, saying, "Behold, the words of the prophets are uniformly favorable to the king. So please let your words be like one of them and speak favorably." Micaiah said, "As the Lord lives, what my God says, that I will speak." When he came to the king said to him, "Micaiah, shall we go to Ramoth-Gilead to battle, or shall I refrain?" And he said, "Go up and succeed, for they will be given into your hand." And the king said to him, "How many times must I adjure you to speak to me nothing but the truth in the name of the Lord?" So he said, "I saw all Israel scattered on the mountains like sheep which have no shepherd. And the Lord said, 'These have no master. Let each of them return to his house in peace.'" The king of Israel said to Jehoshaphat, "Did I not tell you that he would not prophesy good concerning me, but evil?" Notice here particularly Ahab's rebuke in verse 15. "How many times must I adjure you to speak to me nothing but the truth in the name of the Lord?" Well, once again, I don't know whether it was just the way that Micaiah said it or not. It was possible that, again, he'd just been told to say what the other prophets said, so he goes in and was mimicking what they were saying, speaking the way they were. Yet it was obviously not to be taken literally here, and Ahab knew better. So Micaiah tells him seriously of the disaster that would strike if they go up to Ramoth-Gilead to fight. They would lose. "Tell me the truth. This is what Ahab said, but it's not what he wanted. There is a difference." Did he really want the truth? Did I not tell you he wouldn't tell me this? Well, tell me the truth. How many would rather, would we rather say, "Well, everybody lied to me. I don't want the truth." Well, no, we're not going to say that. The question still goes to our motives. When we say we want the truth, do we mean that we really want the truth? Or are we more or less giving on a show of honesty without really being honest deep down? That's what Ahab was doing. When we see the truth, when we hear the truth, how do we react to it? The truth can be difficult to take. It can be very hard to swallow. Paul, writing to the Galatians, asked them a very pointed question. He was perplexed about the Galatian brethren as they were being influenced by Judaizing teachers. In Galatians 4 and verse 15, he says, "Where then is that sense of blessing you had? For I bear witness that if possible, you would have plucked out your eyes and given them to me. So have I become your enemy by telling you the truth?" There's something in the way that what Paul was saying to them that many of them would have taken offense at. Paul says, "I'm simply telling you the truth, and I've become offensive to you in the process when there was a time when you would have given everything for me. What's changed? What's happened?" Truth is always what we must seek. For it is the truth that sets us free from sin. John 8 and verse 32. I'm going to share with you something from a fellow gospel preacher written years ago that he simply called "Tell Me the Truth." This comes from Bill Cruz. He said, "If you are my friend, if you are concerned about my soul, give me the truth. Do not flatter me. Do not praise my virtues while remaining silent about my vices. Do not fear the truth will offend me. Do not treasure our friendship, our friendly relations, above my salvation. Do not think that by ignoring my sins, you can help. Do not think that being blind to my sins will prove yourself charitable. However I may react, whatever may be my attitude toward you after you have done it, give me the truth. For the truth and only the truth can make men free from the shackles of sin. Strengthen me in the pathway of righteousness and lead me to the joys of heaven. If I am wavering, weak, lukewarm, indifferent, neglectful, if I have been overtaken in a trespass, if I have been drawn into the pleasures of the world, if I have left my first love, if I have been led astray by error, or if I have done none of these things but simply need to grow in knowledge and be edified, give me the truth. And may that be the attitude of all of us. Well, you know the rest of the story. In 2 Chronicles 18, 28 and following, Ahab did push ahead to go fight for Ramoth-Gilead. And he died in the battle. Even trying to disguise himself and get away, we might say, quote-unquote, stray arrow found him. He died. Jehoshaphat went back home. And he was rebuked, but not deposed. 1 Chronicles 19 and verse 1 says, "Then King Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, returned in safety to his house in Jerusalem. Jehu, the son of Hanani, the seer," this is not the same Jehu that killed off the family of Ahab. "Jehu, the son of Hanani, the seer, went out to meet him and said to him, to King Jehoshaphat, 'Should you help the wicked and love those who hate the Lord and so bring wrath on yourself from the Lord? But there is some good in you, for you have removed the Asherah from the land, and you have set your heart to seek God.' And though he did initiate great reforms, and he demonstrated great faith, he still didn't learn too well about making these alliances. As 2 Chronicles 21 reminds us, after this, Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, allied himself with Ahaziah, king of Israel. He acted wickedly in so doing. So he allied himself with him to make ships to go to Tarshish, and they made the ships in Ezion-Geber. And Eleazar, the son of Davida of Mereshah, prophesied against Jehoshaphat, saying, 'Because you've allied yourself with Ahaziah, the Lord has destroyed your works.' So the ships were broken, and they could not go to Tarshish." It matters who you make yourself a companion of. And consequences can be unintended, but they can also be very far-reaching. And the truth always, always matters. Let's prepare to sing the song that was chosen. As we sing, "All things are ready," understand, indeed, that is the case. We stand ready to help. The Lord has made everything ready for this great feast. It is but ours to accept and participate in. And perhaps this morning you need to die with Christ, to be buried with him, and be raised up with him, to be united with him in the likeness of his death, burial, and resurrection. And that is what Paul says baptism does for us in Romans, the 6th chapter. To be united with him in the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus. If we can help you this morning, let us know while we stand and sing.